This call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, please disconnect at this time.
Welcome and thank you for taking the time to attend the sixth installment of our webinar series, Beyond Wall Street, Alternative Income Strategies for Accredited Investors. The call today will last 30 minutes. Today, Jan Bresky, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of Arixa Capital, and John Ward, Chief Investment Officer at Turnstone Capital, will discuss upgrading LA County's multifamily housing stock. For now, I will hand over the microphone to Jan Bresky.
Thank you very much, Dana, and thank you everybody for joining our webinar this morning. I am very excited to talk with John Ward about his multifamily program, and it's going to be hard to keep this to the 30 minutes, but we're going to do it. There are so many questions I am excited to ask you, John, which will start in just 1 minute. So the format is 20 minutes of Q&A from me, and then we want to ask you to send your questions as well, and the last 10 minutes are mainly reserved for that. But you're welcome to send your questions ahead of time, and there are two ways to do that. One way is to text me on my cell phone, which is 310-428-9109. 310-428-9109. Alternately, you can email Dana and respond to the email that she sent and get your questions that way. But if you text me, I will ask your question. So let's jump right into this. John, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I started in finance in 1979 as a loan officer, and from 79 through the early 90s, I was in almost every part of the loan business, from FHA loans, conventional loans, apartment loans, et cetera.
Fantastic. And then when did you start investing in real estate yourself?
So we formed the original Turnstone in 1997, and we started out as a flipping company, buying, fixing, and flipping, like you see on television, in all over LA County. And by 1998, we purchased our first apartment building, and we basically had dual tracks from that time since, doing flips and apartment investing.
Okay. And so let's talk about the downturn. It's a little bit painful, but all of us have been through downturns. It makes us better investors, and I want to hear a little bit about your experience and maybe a couple of lessons that you learned in the big financial crisis.
The financial crisis hit me very hard. I was highly leveraged at the time, and some of my takeaways that I learned from that crisis are focusing on what you do well, choose a few parts of the business that you're really good at and stick with those and not chase every opportunity that comes your way as the other ones dry up.
Makes sense. And after the financial crisis, you had an opportunity to really scale up your buying activity on the single family side. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, our past history with apartments and single families, having done so many renovations, was perfect for a partnership with a couple of large hedge funds that were buying multiple thousands of single families across the country. And we became the Los Angeles County provider, if you will, to two large hedge funds. We purchased approximately $60 million in single family residences from Antelope Valley all the way down to Long Beach and to the east part of Los Angeles County. And every one of those properties, we purchased them, we renovated them, we rented them out, and then ultimately managed the portfolio for these large hedge funds.
And one thing I think makes your business different from other multifamily investors is that most multifamily investors shy away from smaller buildings. They want a building that's big enough to have an on-site property manager, and yet you have this extensive background in single-family rentals. And so it's giving you access to a market that other people have kind of ignored. So maybe why don't we go into a typical investment? So in your multifamily program, which is your main focus today and for years and years to come, I know you're passionate about building this into a sizable business. Let's talk about a typical investment. What's the property type? What location are you focusing on?
So we're focusing, I'll answer the questions backwards and then forwards. We're focusing on what I call the middle markets, or the B and C markets in Los Angeles County. So this is not the very worst neighborhoods, but a lot of the working class neighborhoods. Some typical cities would be Inglewood, Hawthorne, Lawndale, Long Beach, Paramount, Bell Gardens, some of the good working class cities in this in the county.
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing to the properties when you buy them?
So our plan is different. What is happening in Los Angeles County as a whole is that many developers are building luxury apartments in the luxury areas. In downtown LA, there's going to be 7,000 luxury units coming online in the next year. And we see the luxury market becoming oversaturated. Our plan provides a luxury living apartment experience to those in the low and middle income areas. And it's really going gangbusters for us.
So you're buying in a kind of the neighborhoods that haven't seen as much investment, and you're creating a product that's more of a luxury product. How much are you spending per unit typically to redevelop the properties?
So in these neighborhoods, almost entirely apartment investors buy the properties, and then they do what I call put lipstick on a pig. They do paint, carpet, and rent the properties out. And these properties get rented and fixed year after year after year, and the condition is pretty darn right miserable. We'll come into the apartment, and we completely modernize it. We put new, beautiful, smooth stucco, wood products, metal products, and every surface that the tenant will touch is brand new. New flooring, new cabinets, quartz counters, recessed lighting, stainless steel appliances, and they have the same feel and look that a modern apartment or hotel would have in a luxury area. And the tenants absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm. So basically every surface inside and out is getting redone, and then you're able to get a higher rent from somebody in that neighborhood that wants to be in that neighborhood but can afford a little more than the typical apartment. But how much does it cost per unit? What's the range per unit of budget to do what you do?
We're averaging about $30,000 a unit.
Okay. So I think one value add to point out, you know, this is not easy to do. One thing that I think you're bringing to the table is you're doing for $30,000 a unit what most lay people would probably have spent $50,000 or $60,000 a unit to do, because of you have some efficiencies that you built up through doing hundreds and hundreds of homes, right?
So definitely our cost to do the renovation is significantly lower because of our connections over the years, the contractors we've chosen, that will do great quality, mm-hmm. but at very reduced prices due to volume, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, because they know they're going to get the next project from you so they can afford to give you better prices, because they're going to be constantly busy working with you.
Absolutely.
And so are you focusing exclusively on one area of LA County, or are you expecting to – I remember you talking about freeways and kind of the boundaries of the freeways where you focus, and I thought that was very unique. Can you talk about that, and then maybe talk about are you going outside of those boundaries now, or are you going to – do you think it's very fertile to continue within that area?
The model that we have really runs down the 405 freeway from Santa Monica. Once you get outside of, say, Culver City, which I consider a high-priced area, you start getting into Inglewood and Hawthorne, Lawndale, Gardena, et cetera, East Torrance. Those areas are ripe for this development. There's no land. There's no new construction going on, and those areas are great for our investment. If you head up the 710 freeway, you've got Long Beach, of course, Paramount, you know, Cudahy, Southgate, many cities there that are also very ripe for this kind of development, and there's no new construction going on. And also these cities are seeing a huge resurgence, and there's a lot of people that make good money and stay in the city. They could move to a high price area to pay rent, but they stay in the city because that's where their family is and their support structure is, and they want and desire a much more upscale living experience and are willing to pay for it.
Okay. So let's start talking about the numbers. How do you think about the numbers in this business? How do you decide if a given investment meets your criteria to do?
I am a smaller operator compared to the large operators, so I have to offer a return that is a little higher than one could go to a standard fund. So our typical benchmark is that a deal must strongly pencil out to at least a 15% five-year investor IRR return, or we will not promote it. The good news is that we have outperformed literally every single transaction that we've closed, and so those 15s project much higher after we stabilize the properties.
So you're looking at making sure that you can get the investors a net 15 under very realistic assumptions. That's how you decide whether to do it or not. What's the range of the size of apartments? How many units at the low end and the high end? And let's move into some more rapid-fire questions.
Yeah.
I see we're halfway through our interview, and I have a lot more I want to ask you.
So that's correct, and our range is somewhere between 8 units and 50 units.
Okay. And what's a typical buy price per unit? Give me a range.
$150,000 to $200,000 per unit.
Okay. And you're spending about $30,000 per unit on the rehab. You mentioned the 15 IRR, so you're assuming let's talk about how you finance this first. What kind of financing are you using on the debt side to do your program?
Right, so on the debt side, we're using bridge loans that are able to close quickly mm-hmm. and finance part of our renovation budget, and mm-hmm. the rest of the money is equity that we bring in from investors.
And then what about after the rehab is done and you have new tenants in, then what do you do?
In approximately the end of the first year when the property is stabilized, we will then refinance on long-term loans that generally have a three-year interest-only component and are like a Freddie Mac type loan or similar product.
And what type of rate are you getting on those takeout loans, permanent financing loans after rehab?
Just closed one 2 weeks ago at 4.25%, and a month ago they were at 3.75%.
Okay. So I've got my first question here. Is it possible for investors to get current income with cap rates so low? Let's talk about the one you closed recently. Are the investors in that multifamily property going to be getting current distributions now that the permanent financing is in place?
We give distributions which are actually treated as a return of capital from the very first month. So if I do everything I'm supposed to do correctly, the investor will get a return on their money the very first month we close, even though the property is not producing that return. And that return will continue all the way to the refinance. And then after the refinance, the cash on cash from the building will provide a return consistently all the way through.
So on the one that you just closed, the permanent loan,
yes.
What type of cash flow from operations per year are we talking about? If I invested $100,000 into your investment, would I be getting $3,000 a year of cash flow from operations initially? Would it be $4,000, maybe even $5,000, or something other than that?
In the model that we projected at the purchase of the property, we were projecting about 8.5% cash on cash, so it would be $8,500 on $100,000.
After rehab and refinance.
After refinance. However, we outperformed, and those investors are going to be somewhere around 9.75% cash on
cash. That's remarkable. Anybody who's on this call who knows what's out there in real estate land for investors knows that it's very, very hard to get real cash flow on apartments in LA County. So this is a niche. This is why we're talking to John and not talking to one of the many other talented people that we know in the industry. We like cash flow and we like income.
Don't forget, that's also depreciated cash flow because you get depreciation benefits when you own real estate. So you're
right.
Not going to pay tax on all of that money until the end.
Right. So let's see. I think the reason that you're getting much more cash flow than others is that it's hard to execute your strategy, and most of the people with a lot of capital are not able to execute on these small projects efficiently. They need to do bigger projects because they need to write bigger checks to be efficient. That's my personal commentary for those of you that are wondering, why is this possible? Typically, it's only possible when you're in a niche where there's not too much capital, and this is a niche where there's not too much capital yet.
That's why we choose to be there, because the big, huge institutional investors will not invest in this small of an asset, and it's a little bigger than the mom and pops will do.
Okay, so here's the question. I want to know, what does the final product look like in terms of financing? Example, we have a 70% loan-to-value first trust deed at X percent fixed rate, Y years interest only, and 30% equity. So you said, what's the rate on the loan you just closed?
So the rate on the loan we just closed was 4.25.
Okay. What's the amortization period on that?
That's a 30-year
okay.
3 years interest only, and then it will convert to principal and interest on the fourth year.
Okay.
And the loan to value and loan to cost are the following. They went 80% of our cost, and they gave us 65% of value, which happened to be about $25,000 more than we projected in our original model.
Okay. So back to the numbers. Let's talk about the going-in cap rate and then the stabilized cap rate, and we'll define what those are. But when you buy the property, is it typically – it typically has renters in it, right?
Yes.
What's the typical rent that somebody who's in one of these units might be paying for a one- or two-bedroom unit before the rehab when you buy it?
The current rents on these apartments are, for say, for a one-bedroom are between $900 and $1,100.
Okay. And on a two-bedroom?
On a two-bedroom, $1,200 to $1,300.
And how about when you're done? What are the rents rehabbed after the rehab?
At post rehab on the one bedroom is going to go somewhere up to $1,300 to $1,400.
Okay.
And the two bedrooms are in the $1,600 to $1,700.
All right. So there's your value added right there. So on the $900 to $1,100 rents on the legacy tenants that were there when you bought it, do you even look at the cap rate on acquisition? By the way, we did send out a couple of pictures, so hopefully if you have access to your email, you can see a sample building that John bought in Los Angeles and what it looked like when he bought it and what it looked like when he was done, because I wanted you to have a visual of what we're talking about. Not every building is so beat up as this. A lot of them just look like the buildings that we pass as we drive down the street every day, but this particular one, it was a dramatic change.
It was dramatic, but we try to make them all really pop from the street.
Right. So, do you even think about the going-in cap rate, or do you not really worry about that?
I don't really worry about it, because if you remember, a lot of the properties, the real estate agents are trying to sell, so they are putting sale, you know, terms in their offering memorandums, and that's why you need to have really good analysts. My partners and my analysts on staff are really good at determining what the value is and what it will be when we're finished.
Okay, so what about your assumed exit cap rate? Or let's back up. You buy at $150 to $200 a door. You put in $30,000 a unit, and then you re-rent it. So you have a certain amount of income after you've re-rented it. When you compare that to the cost of your total cost on the project, that's what I call your stabilized cap rate on cost. What's your stabilized cap rate on cost typically?
Our models that we project at the close of escrow are in the high 5%, 5.6, 5.7, 5.9. But generally, and so far every time we've stabilized a building, we've been in the high 6s into the 7s and even higher, because we always outperform our models.
You've been exceeding your models on
yeah.
these. Okay. Are you seeing a lot of copycats yet? I mean, are you seeing a lot of other buildings being done the way you build them in the neighborhoods where you buy, or not so much yet?
No, and that's why we don't do a lot of webinars.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, there's always a risk to this, right? You put yourself out there. You're giving up a little bit of your secret sauce. So we hope this is valuable for you out there, because John's putting himself out there for us. So I've got another question. How often do residents sue owners? When they do, do you tend to settle or fight with your insurer?
We've actually had one situation where residents attempted to sue us on when we were evicting them. They also included the old owner, because the old owner really left the property run down and put them in bad condition. But we we work very well and individually with every single tenant. We meet with them. We ended up to work through things. It never materialized, and they've all signed cash for keys, but a couple of them, and we're already on demo in the building and get through it. So it can happen, but it's something you have to work through and be prepared for.
Right. Okay, we are just about into our Q&A, 10 minutes here, so I want to encourage people to text me with your questions so we know that we're answering the questions that matter to you. Again, my cell phone number for texting is 310-428-9109, and Dana, please let me know if you get any questions. Let's talk about risks. One of the things I like, John, about you is that you've been through the cycles and you know what to look out for from that. So what do you see as risks that could really affect the returns that you and your investors are getting?
This is a very important question that people ask because it is an investment. And while I try to perform and our history is great, there are a lot of risks. I feel like execution risk is minimal. However, we have China looming with all kinds of problems. We have Greece and the Eurozone that could fall apart. We've always had Middle East problems and potential for wars. And then you have terrorism, internal, external. You know, these things freeze investors, and they would freeze prices, and then you could have a domino effect.
So when you say freeze prices, meaning property prices are falling, generally speaking, and then your exit that you expected to have at X dollars per unit ends up being less than X dollars per unit. But you could just keep holding in that case.
Absolutely.
Right?
Footprint in the sand always fills up over time.
So are you, and remind me, your loan is fixed rate for, I've got a lot of questions coming in.
Good.
Your loan is fixed rate for how many years?
It's fixed for 5 years.
And after that, is there
an adjustable?
It's adjustable. So,
it's adjustable.
So if rates spike up and property values plummet, there is a little bit of refinance risk there where you might, your payment, your cash flow could drop at that.
Absolutely. But Okay. Remember, economic downturns generally lower rates so they can, you know, produce more out of the economy.
Okay. I'm going to have to get through some of these questions. Of your IRR, which I believe he says 15 plus, that's net to the investor after John charges his fees and promotional fee, how much of that is cash on cash? Is it 5% cash on cash? How much of the IRR comes from cash flow and how much comes from appreciation?
Okay, so that's a great question. It's about 50-50, and that's what I look as part of a hedge.
Okay. I had a really funny question here. Why do Asian investors like Turnstone Deals? Who are stronger real estate investors, UCLA or USC? I think we're going to pass on that. That sounds like that's an incendiary question. But
I don't have an axe to grind in that question.
We appreciate the humor there. What is the plan after rehab and stabilization? Refinance, hold, sell. Spell out the numbers on a real deal, please. So I believe you said that your plan is to refi after year one and then sell after about 4 to 5 more years after that. Is that correct?
My personal plan is to generate a portfolio, a large portfolio, throwing off a substantial amount of cash flow for myself, my partners, and my investors. If my investors need to sell in the fifth year, we will either get them bought out or we will sell the building. But our plan is a large portfolio generating a lot of cash flow.
Okay, so the reason that your hold period is 5 years is it's long enough to generate some real cash flow, but it's short enough, presumably, that your investors have an option to get out after 5 years and you're not telling them, hey, this could be a 25-year investment, which might scare people.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't know me,
right.
I'm assuming when we get to 5 years, most will want to stay in and not have a capital event and pay taxes.
Right.
So,
how do you decide when to sell? This is a question from one of the people on the call.
In the operating agreement, I can sell in the fourth, fifth, or sixth year as the manager. If value is going down, I'll probably sell early, and if value is going up, I'll probably sell late.
Okay. Prop 13. How big of a risk is the elimination of Prop 13 tax protection for commercial real estate? Do you see that as potentially in the cards here in California?
I pray not, But one of the areas I hedge in my models is that I show a 3% increase across the board on all expenses, and my expenses only go up about 1.5%, leaving me extra room, which would be extra profit or could pay extra taxes or insurance if they were to go up incrementally fast.
Okay. So as the general partner, John, what percentage of the profits do you typically get, and after your investors have achieved some base return, what percentage of the profits are you typically getting?
Our promote is between 25 and 30% depending on the transaction.
Great.
And there are some fees.
Okay. And are you co-investing in these with your own money?
Every deal.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate on, let's ask for a few more questions from the audience. We've got 5 more minutes. So you were saying the main risk is something happens and values just of all commercial real estate drop, and therefore you can't hit your IRR. It's year 5, it's time to sell, and you can't hit your IRR. So your game plan there is just hold it and then wait a little bit longer because you're getting current cash flow, right?
Exactly.
What else? What are the risks, though? That to me seems like a relatively benign risk, because if your investors are getting cash flow, then it's not such a burden to have to hold a few extra years for market values to recover. What are the other risks? Let's talk about risks that actually, you know, you really worry about, that something out of left field that could hurt your program.
Our program is pretty solid, and I do kind of worry about the one investor that wants to get out in 5 years. If they have a life-changing event and they really need their money, then I believe even though we might not have a contractual obligation, we have a moral obligation to get them their money. And if the market's down, that could cause a problem for everybody else. So I do worry about that, and I hope that it never happens, but that is the potential. But honestly, I most worry about terrorism. I don't worry about earthquakes because we get our work done for so cheap, we can do it cheaper than anybody else. But it's really terrorism.
So if you had an earthquake, you could repair the building yourself. You're not insuring for earthquake. I'm sorry, if you had an earthquake.
I generally do not do earthquake insurance.
Right.
And one of the things is that earthquakes don't generally devastate an entire county. They run
right.
in lines. They go up and down Crenshaw, for example.
Right.
And we have buildings dotted all over. And so
right.
investors are well-placed, and they have diversification across multiple investments. And I think that's a really great hedge rather than being in one 400-unit building, you know, in Northridge that could potentially have a problem and wipe out all your investment.
Right, right. Similar to our lending strategy of not being in one specific
neighborhood. Diversification is key in this program.
I have another question. How do you finance the buy? All equity raise, any debt? So we talked about how you are using private debt for a portion of the acquisition money.
The total capital stack ends up to be approximately 60% to 70% debt and the rest equity, including the investors and myself.
Okay. And how long is your typical escrow?
The purchase escrows are generally pretty fast, like 45 days, because in order to be attractive to the sellers, we need to go in very hard with no loan contingency and have a very short inspection period. They want their money fast, and I'm competing against people with cash.
So I missed how many weeks typically?
Generally, they're 30 to 45 day total escrow period.
Okay. All right. Do you get exculpatory language relative to personal recourse on the takeout loans?
So let me explain what that means. We do recourse on our purchase bridge loans, but on the takeout loans, we do not like to sign personal recourse. So we have it in our operating agreement that we're not required to sign personal recourse.
Okay. Can you describe your deal sourcing strategy? And are you focused by zip code or generally just on the 405 and 710 corridors?
We are focused in basically low and middle income areas, and the more equity we raise, the further those areas will expand. San Diego, Ventura County, Western Riverside County, they're all next, and there's plenty of outside state that I can do when the equity balance gets sufficient. And so it's really a program that is very repeatable.
So you are envisioning taking the same type of strategy if you had enough equity out of the the region that you're in right now?
Yes, I've been all over Texas and California, and I could do...
But how do you think about, having gone through the financial crisis, how do you think about the trade-off between growth and then knowing your market's cold because you live here and you've done, you know, you've probably done the transaction a couple blocks away from almost any transaction that you're doing now, which makes you that much better in this market?
It absolutely makes me, I would agree, I'm 100% the best in LA County and Riverside County. That said, I've gone out of state and we have an established trade. We can repeat this in multiple places. It takes due diligence and it takes expertise.
Okay. On that note, I think it's time to wrap up. I want to thank John Ward for a very interesting explanation of what I think is a very innovative strategy, and it's working. I have one more question here, so if those of you who want to stay on for an extra minute, I'm going to ask that question, and then the one announcement I do want to make is we are going to send you an invitation to our event at UCLA Anderson School of Business in April, which is going to be, it's been our flagship event for Rick's Capital for the last 11 years, and we have an incredible panel talking about commercial real estate strategies kind of on a regional and national basis, and we'll let you know about that in case you're interested in attending. We like doing educational information and informational things because we find that the people that are attracted to that are the people that we naturally like doing business with. So that's why we're doing all of these events and webinars. I got a thank you, and then I've got my last question. How do you set up your entity, limited partnerships? Are your investors getting debt and equity?
So first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's been really fun. And every property is held in a single purpose LLC, and we are the manager. My company is the manager of that LLC, and the investors are individual LLC shareholders, and the individual equity investors never sign on any loans. We sign on all of the loans across, so it's completely a passive.
I know you've been fabulous on hitting your budgets, but in case, let's say there was an earthquake and there was a need to reconstruct some things that got damaged on a particular building, do the investors have an obligation to invest more than their original investment amount if the partnership needs capital?
The operating agreement calls for additional investment if it needs extra capital, and we also have the ability to loan to the partnerships if they need extra capital. And so far we haven't had to do it, and I hope I never have to.
Right. All right. Thank you so much, and we appreciate you joining the webinar.
This call has been recorded.